Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from Talk Sport.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Game Day Preview podcast from Talk Sport with me, Sam Matterface, and an eclectic cast of football brains ready to dice up the most important information ahead of all 10 Premier League fixtures this weekend. Liverpool travel to Chelsea after paying the penalty in Naples, with the Blues likely to be without Mason Mount. But after his penalty woe, can Frank bank on Barkley? Arsenal's marshmallow defence, a super looky-likey, Vardy's top six scouts, and how can you crush your mates on Dream Team? As we ask Andrew Butler to unearth the Premier League equivalent of Erling Braut Haaland. Plus West Ham and Manchester United, and Watford go to poor, defenceless Manchester City. Every Premier League game previewed ahead of a crucial weekend. This is Game Day from TalkSport.
This is Game Day, Premier League Preview Show.
In the studio with me this week, a debut for Nicole Holliday. Hello, how are you?
Hello. I particularly liked Arsenal's marshmallow defence.
Yes, we'll get to that in just a second. You are an Arsenal fan, aren't you?
Oh, unfortunately at the moment, yes.
So basically, anything you say about them will be like they're defending unbalanced, right?
Sure. Not biased at all.
And David Connolly is here, the man who, with more clubs than an average 90s packed lunchbox, orange ones were my favourite.
Yes, that's an old joke, but yeah, keep them coming, Sam.
We've got to try a different club joke every single time you come on the podcast.
How many are there? More clubs than Jack Nicklaus? I don't know, where do we end?
I haven't used that one yet.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. Right, let's get started.
Mane into the area. Gokins come out. Doesn't get there. Mane does, as it rebounds off the Dubravka and into the Senegalese's path. And Liverpool have turned this game on its head. It's a second goal for Sadio Mane.
Cross to Abraham, who heads it down. Henderson makes the miss of it. And Tammy Abraham's tucked it home. Mistake from Dean Henderson. And Tammy Abraham makes it three goals in two games to set Chelsea on their way at Stamford Bridge.
Pulisic now onto Mount inside the area. He's beaten Hanley and he's shooting towards goal. And that was some finish by Mason Mount. His second goal in two games in the Premier League for Chelsea. And that was an outstanding goal.
Stamford Bridge, Rafa, plastic flags, Fabio Aurelio's dodgy free kick, Frank Lampard's double, the 4-4, Torres, Drogba, a rivalry made in the Champions League. And after both teams had brilliant weekends last weekend, are we ready to set up a tantalising blockbuster or what? Oh, hold on a second. They both stumbled in the Champions League. How much of an impact would that have? Because Chelsea really should have no chance here against probably right now the best team in the league. But I think up until they lost Mason Mount, David, Chelsea fans were a bit confident. Quietly confident.
Yeah, and with good reason, I guess. I mean, they were brilliant against Wolves, who normally do really well against sides in the top six, don't they? Their record's fantastic, but obviously Europa League has taken its toll on them, certainly. But I think the sort of Mount injury, to me, I feel that maybe Frank could have just given him a rest. I think he's played an awful lot of football. He scored, 96 minutes against Wolves? And then maybe with the likes of Pedro Pulisic, I think he could have afforded just to leave him out. If he's that important,
that's
just
not going to stop
a
tackle from Francis Coquelin, but
no.
Is it going to help the healing process?
Well, I don't know, but I think he's relied on him so much. Now he's got to call upon someone else who really has been out of favour. So who's going to play that number 10 role, which is going to be a big role against Liverpool?
Yeah, I think Chelsea are going to struggle now. I mean, losing Mount, we don't know obviously what the injury is, how severe it is, how long he might be out for, but it didn't look great, did it? It looked pretty bad from where I was sat anyway. I think that's going to be a huge blow for Frank Lampard. I just think, look, obviously Liverpool are the likely winners anyway. They've won every game so far in the Premier League. They're in brilliant form, apart from obviously the slip-up in the Champions League the other night. I'm definitely backing Liverpool. I think, I just think, like you're saying, the problem with Chelsea right now is that they don't have too much depth within the squad. Obviously with the transfer ban, that they've got these youngsters and it's awesome that they've got them. But you need to be careful, because if you lose Tammy Abraham, then, you know, what are they going to do going forward? They've got the whole season.
Inconsistency as well comes with having a young squad. But if they are going to have a template of how to get joy out of Liverpool, David, how do they do it? Because Liverpool have got a good record against Chelsea. I think they've lost only one of the last nine against them. Chelsea have won only two of 11 against them over the course of the last few seasons. The fullbacks for Liverpool love to press high up the pitch, get in opposition territory and join in the attack. Sometimes that does mean that they leave a little bit of space in behind. Obviously, they're very rapid and get up and down very quickly. But is that Chelsea? Can Chelsea use that to their advantage at Stamford Bridge on Sunday?
Well, they could do, but it depends if they play this back three. I mean, because then you're asking wing-backs to go and do that role. I mean, if you look at a Napoli game, they did it really well, didn't they, against Liverpool in terms of every time they span that ball in behind, they look really, really threatening. Now, did the defeat against Napoli, did it surprise many? Probably not. I think last season they played them.
They lost
there,
yeah.
And they didn't even have a shot on target. So you always knew this was going to be a tough game, right? I don't think it really surprised anyone. But certainly those wing-back, those full-back areas, if he plays that three, will be certainly one area that Liverpool will exploit.
Now, look, we all work in quite tight industries where you have to be very close with people. You have to rely on other people to help you out, right? Okay. And sometimes there's fallings out. Okay.
Yep.
People do not necessarily always get on. We like, you know, we hate each other, really, the three of us.
You're awful.
But on air, we're like so nice to one another. We make it look
you
really
good. You should be
good.
Sharing the airways with me a little bit more. Is that what you're getting at?
But Sadio Mane and Roberto Firmino and Mohamed Salah are probably the best strike force, the most complete strike force in European football right now, right? Okay. But ultimately, the falling out between Salah and Sadio Mane highlighted something to me. It highlighted just how selfish Mohamed Salah can be. And I think he has been this season more greedy than maybe he was last season. I think that sort of just focused my mind on that. But also, I've been watching them in subsequent games since that happened. I went to the Newcastle game. I did the Napoli game in midweek. And I just don't think they're as connected as they have been last season. Look, Liverpool have been brilliant, by the way, this campaign, because they haven't really got out of third gear yet. They've still won every single game. But I don't know. This ain't not right there.
Well, obviously, with the international break, it was interesting. I read the local Liverpool Echo, and Jurgen Klopp was saying, oh, you know, a lot of the lads have had some time off. Mo Salah.
Yeah,
Mane. And Mane. And I was saying, they went on holiday. Did they go? I doubt they went together.
But hand in hand.
That would have been a great Instagram picture,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
But I think certainly the break would have done them both a little bit of good. Now, I think Mane's come back really refreshed. Last time they had an international break, he barely scored for the club. He looked knackered, and he's already said he's had, 20 days holiday a year for the last 7 years. Well, he looks really refreshed. He was superb, wasn't he, at the weekend? He scored an absolutely stunning goal. But I agree, there is a little bit more to this, because against Napoli, again, Salah, to me, was a little bit greedy. Could have passed to Mane, and Mane had this look, you should have passed to me. He went to motion towards him, turned around, thought better of it, and thought, let's just forget about it. And he's probably in that mindset now. It's just Mo. That's Mo.
Mm. Yeah, but don't they kind of have to be quite selfish? It is interesting, because obviously if you're in a good position and they're going for it, that was kind of the falling out, wasn't it? That I think Mane was really angry that Salah didn't pass it to him and he was in a better position.
At Burnley,
Yeah, but you've kind of got to be selfish, and surely that competitiveness will maybe push them both to score more. No?
Possibly. I guess it's a bit like Aston Villa with Mings and El Ghazi, although they didn't quite come to blows. But I imagine if Mane was still on the pitch, they would probably at some point have a bit of a tear up and say, well, hang on, any chance of you passing to me? Not all about you.
What's the closest you've come to having a tear up?
Well, I've had quite a few of those.
I can imagine. Tell us one.
There's probably too many, but often on a football pitch, I think you can have that honesty. I think it's fine. I really do. And invariably, you kind of just get on with it and put it to one side. But that happens more frequently than probably anyone thinks. But not to the extent that you would maybe go head to head with someone.
Yeah.
Okay. Who wins this game then, very quickly?
Oh, Liverpool. Yeah, Liverpool.
Liverpool away victory. I think they look just imperious form, and also because City are slipping up, I think it gives them that extra little thing to hold on to.
Chelsea love a big scalp. They've beaten the side that start the day on the top of the league on 18 occasions since this inception of the Premier League, more than anybody else. My first ever match actually was 1987 May in Stamford Bridge in West London. Beautiful sunshine. It finished 3-3, and I tell you what, this game in most recent times, more often than not, has been a draw. Might be the same this weekend. Right, let's get to the King Power Stadium. Spurs scored 4 goals at home last week in a rampant first half. But David, Brendan Rodgers is not going to allow Toby Alderweireld to play Tom Brady this week, is he? I mean, the guy was like a quarterback who never got rushed last week, spraying passes all over the place, diagonal balls into the box over the top of the Palace defence. How much more difficult is it going to be for them against Leicester at the KP?
Well, look, they were absolutely superb, Spurs. As bad as Palace were, I think Tottenham were outstanding. Finally, Poch has bitten the bullet and he selected the likes of Rose, Alderweireld, Vertonghen, all in the same team. Now, too often this season, we've seen them out. The likes of Eriksen, too. I mean, maybe the damage that he has done by being so stubborn, I think they'll recover from it. But they were sensational. Like, Son was absolutely magnificent, wasn't he? I mean, some of the passing, as you say, Alderweireld, even Sissoko into Son in the little pocket. I mean, they were brilliant.
Yeah, Son is great, and he scored a brace, didn't he? Absolutely fantastic. But also with this fixture, I mean, Spurs have won 4 out of the last 5 Premier League fixtures against Leicester, so it's more than likely that they are going to do it. I've been impressed with Leicester so far, minus the game last weekend. Although they were quite unlucky, I guess. Obviously lost 1-0 to United. But Jamie Vardy is absolutely on fire at the moment. He's doing so well. He could be quite threatening, but I do think Spurs have kind of got back into the swing of things a bit. I think they're finding their feet. I think started off a little bit rough around the edges, and obviously we didn't really know what was going on behind the scenes with Poch, with some of the players. But I think they're kind of nailing it down now.
They had a real problem behind the scenes in the first few weeks of the season, and I don't know if they brought that on themselves or he brought that on himself by continually talking about it, but ultimately they look much more settled after their 1-hour meeting. Apparently this is what they should do with Mane and Salah, by the way. They should just get and for just get them in a room,
hold hands.
1-hour meeting.
Show a viral video.
Show them that video of those two kids that run up to each other and don't share the chocolate bar, which is doing the rounds on social media. Yeah. They just flush it all out of their system.
Yeah, I mean, he has made mistakes. Even, for example, if you go back to the North London derby where he selected Davinson Sanchez at right back, I mean, how much better did Aurier look at right back? You know, looked absolutely fantastic. So,
well, there's a shock, a right back playing right back rather than a centre half.
There you go. You know, crazy. But these are simple things. So I'm not too sure what's been sort of going on in Poch's mind of late. But going back to what Nicole said about Vardy, I looked at Vardy's stats and he is the most efficient forward there is.
Talk about economical. 4 shots on target
not
all
just
season,
that.
3
not,
goals.
Yeah, but not just that. His touches, his average touches, because I did a little piece for the Times on this, around 16 to 18 touches a game.
Was that you just saying you're big time now? Just
dropping it in there. Hey.
Yeah,
casual.
Just dropping it in.
I did a piece for the Times.
Well, yes, you know, highbrow. But basically, he's so efficient with what he has. He basically doesn't have a lot, but what he does with it, you know, is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So again, I imagine he'll be feeding off scraps. They'll be sitting deep. They'll be playing on the counter-attack. They'll be trying to get it to the likes of Madison. But if they play Madison wide, as they have done, I don't think it works for them.
No.
How many times did we see Ben Chilwell last week get the ball out wide, left back, look up, he had nothing there because Madison loves to drift inside. So this shape that Rodgers plays is 4-1, 4-1 with Madison wide on the left. I think he's got to scrap that, particularly against Aurier. He needs someone out there like an Albrighton or somebody who's going to get up and down.
Last week, and it's strange because he played at Chelsea that same system with Madison playing on the left-hand side. They got ripped apart for the first 25 minutes and then Madison moved infield and they were so much better as a result of that. And actually, potentially could have. I mean, Chelsea were tired because they played 120 minutes in midweek, but they could have won that game. He is an influential figure. He is very creative. He's also got a fantastic haircut and looks very sort of willowy and moves beautifully through any sort of defence. He's a really creative player, but they're not getting the best out of him at the moment.
No, they're not. And ironically, people said, "Oh, last week was Maddison's audition at Old Trafford." He could have one here against Tottenham because if Eriksen, for example, goes,
might be a better fit for him.
I tell you, it'd be a fantastic fit in that number 10 role. Eriksen, I don't think he's going to stay.
No, he's
and Maddison, he's got all the tools, I feel, and a good haircut to go with it. I think he'd suit Spurs right down to the ground.
You really like that hair, don't you?
I love it. I think he looks great. I modelled mine on it, although I had a bit of an accident with a trimmer earlier in the week.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, no, it just went too far. Some people just don't know when to stop, do they? That was my hairdresser. Kane's getting on the score sheet this week, isn't he? 13 goals in 12 games against Leicester. I bet everyone else was loving it after the game last week, but he was furious, wasn't he, in that dressing room because he didn't score. That's what strikers are like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they'll play this diamond that they played with Son. This will be interesting if they give Kane a partner or not. Mm. Will they give him someone up top? Because I think he actually prefers being on his own. He's one of those loners. You know, he wants to be up there by himself. You know, I think he likes Son in around him, but I don't think he wants him right beside him.
Do you think there's a situation where he might not share his chocolate bar with
I think so.
Anyone?
Potentially. He wants that chocolate bar all to himself. No, I think he'll definitely be gutted that he didn't get on the score sheet, but then it might give him more of a push this weekend. He might then feel like he's got to prove a point, and he's brilliant, so he could be lethal.
Hey, they were great with that energy that Son provides. Yeah. When he missed those couple of games, you know, you can see what he brings to the
team. Absolutely,
he really
so does. Good.
Just to throw it out there that Tottenham away from home are the definition of bad.
They're really bad away at the moment, aren't they?
When was the last time they won away from home, do you know?
Eight games?
January the 20th in the Premier League against Fulham. That's how bad they are away from home.
Oh, wow.
Do you think they get 3 points against Leicester?
Yes, I think they will.
I think so, but after hearing that, no, I think they will. I do, although Leicester are good at the moment. No, I'm going to go with Spurs.
We've wavered you. You didn't know which way to go then. I'm going to go for Leicester. Ooh. Even though Spurs always win at Leicester. Mm. I'm going to be there for game day, live on Talk Sport. Reshmin Chowdhury, Stuart Pearce and I will be there across the rest of the world. It's live on Premier League Live. Let's now turn our attention to things that are happening on Friday night and get a preview of the game between Southampton and Bournemouth. Here's Tom Rennie.
Two clubs 30 miles apart off the field. On the field, they can't be separated by very much either. Five play, two wins, two losses and a draw apiece sees them locked together on 7 points in 10th and 9th respectively. The Saints deserve great credit for their second win on the road this season at Sheffield United. And in Moussa Djanipo, they may have discovered one of the snips of the summer transfer window. The Mali international was signed for just £15 million, and his superb solo goals against Brighton and at Bramall Lane have fans wondering how such a 2009 price was able to be negotiated in 2019. Ralph Hasenhüttl, who has done well with limited resources, says the winger still has a lot to learn, but fans have no reason to be so cautious. This man could be a star, and an otherwise functional Saints team could certainly do with one, almost as much as they could do with a first home win of the season. For Bournemouth, it was a familiar story last time out, with Ryan Fraser and Callum Wilson again proving their Premier League pedigree in their win over lacklustre Everton, a huge moment in their season, according to boss Eddie Howe. And with players like Lloyd Kelly finally coming back to fitness after long-term injuries, as well as a goalkeeper in Aaron Ramsdale turning out to be a consistent stopper, maybe this won't be a relegation scrap season after all. It's a match much like last week for the Cherries that could have long-term ramifications this season on a ground where they've never won.
The Europa League always seems to cause teams problems. Wolverhampton Wanderers have found that a little bit so far this campaign. Burnley stuttered last campaign. Southampton, after getting through to the group stages of the Europa League a couple of seasons back, almost went down to the Championship. Are Manchester United going to suffer as a result of their European commitments, David Connolly?
Well, if they were, they'd probably be the only, well, they'd be one of the teams to buck the trend. You just have to look at Wolves this season. Yes. Everyone thought they'd be able to cope with that settled team, but they've really, really struggled. So, to be honest, I can't see it being that much different, especially when you look at all the injuries they've had. I mean, Fred came on at the weekend, didn't he? He looks like he'll definitely play Europa League. Then he might play at the weekend as well. And he's interesting, Fred, because he came in for a lot of money, seen as Carrick's replacement. He had his first game, didn't he, for a really long time, about 140 days.
Yeah. It takes a while, though, doesn't it, sometimes for players to settle into the pace of the Premier League? Mm-hmm. And it may be that he has a better season this campaign than he did last because of that.
Yeah, I think he likes to bomb forward. When he came on, I think they took Matic off, he came on, then McTominay sat, and just allowed Fred then to bomb forward a little bit and get in the box. Now, I think that'll probably suit him. If they go to the London Stadium, I think that sitting back and trying to soak up what West Ham have and then hit him on the counter might be their sort of best threat, really. And the good thing for them is the likes of Rashford got a penalty, got a goal,
yeah,
nearly got another one, didn't he? Hit the bar. Mm. And I think he needed that, certainly after his England performances, because he was pretty average. I know he was better in the second half against Bulgaria, but in the first half he really struggled. But I think certainly back in the Red Devils kit, he looks much happier.
United might be struggling because they've got a few injuries. I mean, Daniel James midweek, Pogba is quite uncertain at the moment, Martial, Shaw. So they could struggle. I mean, West Ham and United, they've actually both had the same start to the season. They've both won two, drawn two and lost one. So they're kind of on equal footing at the moment. But I don't know. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will feel like he's got quite a lot to prove as well.
Ironically, I think West Ham have got the sort of centre-forward or the type of centre-forward that Man United could do with.
Sebastian Haller.
You just want to take everyone's players and put them in the opposite team.
Well, you know, I think they really are struggling for a number nine, aren't they? That can have that.
Especially with Martial injured. Because he is going to be the number
nine. He's not a number nine, really, is he, Martial?
Well, he hasn't really played there much.
No. Yeah. So he could learn that. We know he can learn that, and he's done well in that position. But if you look at, I don't know, an Ibrahimovic or a Cantona type, big, tall, physical, imposing player that, you know, and United traditionally would work off a lot of balls in the box and get good success like that and then build off a decent, tall front man who's got the lot. And I think that's what Allaire looks like for West Ham.
I mean, you'd make the argument, though, if they can't score against Aston Villa, West Ham United, they're not going to score against Manchester United with Harry Maguire and Lindelof in defence.
Yeah, but I think that sort of Allaire is going to be, he's probably what, the tallest player in the league, certainly the tallest centre forward. Yeah. I think that Maguire is going to face, and Lindelof. If you look at the Palace game, Lindelof was outjumped, wasn't he, by Schlupp?
Yeah.
When you race through.
And then Vestergaard the week after.
So,
although Vestergaard is as high as as tall as the
mountains.
Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, yeah. So I think they'll give, certainly I think Allaire will give the likes of Maguire and Lindelof a challenge that they haven't really faced before. The key thing for West Ham is to get enough balls in the box. Mm-hmm. Certainly from wide areas, we know they've got all the technicians, but they just got to deliver the ball in the box. Masuaku's out, so I don't know who will play left back.
Is Lanzini playing too deep? I don't know. I'm a Monday night. I mean, listen, maybe it's because he's in my fantasy team, right? Maybe because it may be because I'm looking out for him more, but I'm focused on him because I'm so desperate for him to get points.
You're invested.
But I just feel as if he's just playing a little bit deeper than he's used to, and therefore not getting, as you say, as many balls into the box.
Yeah, well, certainly they'll need that, and from wide. If Masuaku's out, I don't know who'll play left. Will it be Cresswell? I don't really fancy him. So they might be struggling in that fullback area, which I don't think it's a position they haven't really solved for a long time, West Ham.
As far as West Ham are concerned, they've so far this season, I think, probably hit par. Would you suggest that?
I think they've done pretty well. I wouldn't completely write them off in this game either. And I mean, look at what we saw last weekend with Norwich and City. I mean, that's the kind of the beauty of football in the Premier League. You never quite know what's going to happen.
But the thing is, West Ham is a little bit like, for me, Arsenal, in that I'm not too sure what they are at this moment in time. I know exactly what Norwich are. They're not going to change for anyone. They're going to play possession play, playing through the thirds. They've got loads of technicians. I'm not quite sure what exactly West Ham, because they've got loads of technicians, lovely ball players, Yarmolenkos, Lanzinis of this world, and Allaire in there too. And how they sort of formulate that, and the goals he scored often come from balls out wide and getting it in the box. I'm not quite sure what they are. If they're a possession-based team, if they're a counter-attacking team, the jury's still out on them. But I think they've got some really talented players.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare insurance plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare insurance plans at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Right, Arsenal against Aston Villa next.
To Lacazette, down round the goalkeeper, gets to the byline, he's very wide, but then turns and shoots and scores a stunning equaliser for Arsenal. What a goal from Lacazette.
A high cross in, looking for Grealish, and Grealish has scored, and Aston Villa have 2 goals in 2 minutes.
Here is Aubameyang running towards the edge of the area after a mistake in midfield. He gets a right footed shot from the edge of the box and slams it home.
Arsenal winning the ball back through Ceballos, who started that. Fed Aubameyang, and Aubameyang finished it off as Aubameyang always does.
Villa go forward and have an opportunity and score, and John McGinn has given Aston Villa the lead. McGinn was suddenly free inside the penalty area and produced a tidy left-footed finish.
Okay, this is the moment you've been waiting for, Nicole. We're going to turn our attention to your team. Aston Villa couldn't score against 10 men West Ham on Monday night, but everyone scores against the most unreliable defence in the country. Now, I know that Unai Emery...
savage!
I know that Unai Emery looks like a 1950s actor playing Dracula, but his team aren't just scared of crosses, are they? They are ridiculously fragile. When the going gets tough, Arsenal are out of here.
Yeah.
How do you change that?
Sam, I don't even know where to start. We started off this season, I was feeling quite confident, actually. I thought Arsenal made some brilliant signings over the summer. Defensively, we've had problems there for a few years now. Did I think that David Luiz was maybe and Kieran Tierney were going to be the be-all and end-all and the solution? No, not really, but it was nice to see someone coming in. But it's just gone downhill again, hasn't it? I mean, we drew against Spurs in the North London Derby. I was there for that and it was a tough watch. And then obviously last weekend against Watford. It's just frustrating. I don't know what to say. Going forward, they look great. We've got some brilliant players. It's just in that defensive and sort of midfield area.
Which has always been a problem.
Yeah.
But let me throw in a caveat, despite the fact that I took the mick at the top, right? Let me just throw in a little bit of perspective here. This is an Arsenal team, David, that are playing without 75% of their first choice back four. So Hector Bellerin is not playing. Mm-hmm. Kieran Tierney is not playing. Rob Holding is not playing. When those three players come back, will everything slot into place for Unai Emery, do you think?
I'm not too sure because...
Is that a no, really?
Yeah, it could be.
A polite no.
If you look at, say, the goals they conceded, certainly against Watford, I don't think it's got anything to do with them defending necessarily. Mm. It's when they have the ball. That's when they seem in most problems, at the back. So I don't know why they persist in playing a particular way if they don't have the players. And also, I have to question his formation at times. Mm-hmm. He's played a diamond twice, mm-hmm. away at Liverpool, which was... I think
failure.
Madness, although he did have some success at that, and I thought they put up a pretty good show considering I'd never even played it before. And then he's played it again against Watford, and I just don't see how they have the natural width. I don't see the players in their rightful positions. Pepe, to me, he's got bags and bags of goals playing out wide on the right as a right winger, inverted, like a Mo Salah, and he's got him playing through the middle, and I think it's an experiment. I would just like him to put the players in their rightful positions And I think they'd look much more comfortable.
And is that the reason they've made so many errors? Because they do make more errors than anybody else. Since the start of last season, Arsenal's players have made more errors leading directly to goals than any other Premier League team.
Even when the player...
And they've given away 10 penalties in that time.
But even when a player comes off, they make an error. Did you see Guendouzi when he got stick from the Watford fans? He was substituting. He put his fingers up. You know, we're winning 2-1. Another mistake. What are you doing?
But Guendouzi is brilliant. I actually really rate him. Do you know what? Individually, we have some fantastic players. Even Pepe needs to score, needs to get a goal.
But do you know what? So what does that tell you, as a fan, what are they, Arsenal? Do you know
if they've got individual players that are really good, and we've all sort of accepted that there are good players in different positions. We mentioned the defence, but you know, what does that tell you? Does that tell you they're not set up right?
Well, look, Xhaka cannot play holding midfield on his own.
You could have just finished that sentence a few words ago.
Okay, but possibly. So it makes you question. You know, I think Emery, maybe he has a false belief or misplaced confidence in his players that Xhaka can play in there by himself, which I don't think he can.
I do think when Bellerin comes back, when Holding comes back, that may change things.
So I've given you hope, is what you're saying.
It is giving me hope, because I've got to let something give me hope. And I think we will improve. I think the past few weeks haven't been great.
What do you think about Emery? Do you think he's got a long-term future at the club? Because there were the first rumblings last Sunday evening after they gave away that 2-goal lead. He's come out and said, we've all got to be solid and look after each other. He told the players they had to go out and be as one in post-match interviews.
Well, look, they've got probably the best front 3, 4, 5 they've had in a long time, right? I mean, Dani Ceballos, Mesut Ozil, Lacazette, Aubameyang, Pepe. They should be achieving with those players. But I don't think trying to play out in your own 6-yard box as they were. Leno can't kick over the halfway line. I don't know if you saw some of his distribution. He could barely reach at times, which made you question, well, why are you playing that sort of way? It doesn't all quite fit for me, that jigsaw.
I went to the Burnley game at home and the whole game they were trying to play out from the back and they just kept giving the ball away. This over the course of the season, I think they've turned the ball over more than anybody else in the Premier League. They concede so many turnovers, and that's a good thing for Aston Villa, because Aston Villa have got players who can take advantage in that situation.
And imagine how frustrating it is for, say, Aubameyang, who, what did he get to, 50, one of the quickest to get to 50 goals, right? And he's there saying, we're literally giving goals away. There's nothing worse when you're a centre forward and you're scoring goals, whatever it is, and you're giving... someone's passing the ball to the opponent 6-7 yards out as they were against Watford. So I got a feeling there's a little bit of dissension in the camp there, and I can understand why.
I mentioned about the rumblings about Emery. He has won 78 points in his 43 Premier League games as the Arsenal boss, which is the exact same amount as Arsene Wenger won in his final 43 Premier League games as boss. You take that statistic and you can use it on Sunday when you watch your team against Aston Villa at home in your season ticket seat.
Stop it.
You can tell your mates about that one. Let's get to St James's Park. Here's Tom Rennie.
Steve Bruce is looking to avoid becoming only the second Newcastle manager to fail to win at St James's Park in his first three games in charge there, after Steve McLaren. Not someone Bruce would have been hoping to emulate when replacing Rafa Benitez this summer. The Magpies find themselves in the bottom three in the fledgling Premier League table with just one win in 5, that's smash and grab at Tottenham, but they have played 3 of the usual top 6, so this could be where the campaign really starts for Steve Bruce. The side they can put out is a big question, however, with fitness doubts over Saint-Maximin, Sean Longstaff and Fabian Schär, with Matt Ritchie definitely out and Andy Carroll. Well, he's Andy Carroll, you know he's out. Brighton have won just one of their last 14 Premier League matches, scoring just 8 goals and drawing a blank on 8 occasions in the process. They are a more offensive side under Graham Potter and should have scored the second to see off Burnley a week ago before Jeff Hendrick's daylight robbery equaliser. Their creative ability should be increased by the return of Leandro Trossard to attacking midfield this weekend, as the Seagulls head to a side they're unbeaten against in 4 meetings. Only against West Ham do they have a better Premier League record.
Andrew Butler is here from Dream Team. Hello.
Hi, Sam. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank
good.
You.
Good. It's nice. You walked into a very lively studio today.
It was lively.
It's very bubbly.
It's the last throes of summer. That's what's going on
I think that's
here.
I think we all feel a little bit like that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's look at Wolverhampton Wanderers and Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park this weekend. Where do you start looking for value in this game?
Well, last weekend, you remember that I tipped Jordan Ayew to maybe break some sort of weird record about being a Ghanaian to score three goals in the Premier League.
How did that work out for you?
It went terribly, and it went terribly within about 20 minutes of the game, because we all knew what happened when Spurs absolutely thrashed them in the first half. For me this week, I think you've got to be looking at someone like Wilf Zaha. I know it seems like an obvious call, but this season he's not really been at it so far, and I think this week it looks like a game that has just to, you know, it has to click for him. You know, Wolves had a torrid time last week, and as well Crystal Palace did as well, and it just looks like Zaha, he's only been selected by 8.3% of managers in Dream Team. He's at 3.1 million. He needs to be starting to deliver, really, if Palace are to do anything this season.
It's about who can, in the words of Ian Dowie, have the best bounce back ability here, isn't it, between these two?
Good word.
Traore, is he going to continue at right back, right wing back in this game? I mean, you look for players in Dream Team that are midfielders but are really forwards, don't you? I mean, to get the points bumped up. But a forward playing as a defender, how does that affect your points?
A forward playing as a defender? Well, he won't score many goals. Probably from back there, unless he comes out for the corners. But you know, it's usually,
but even if he does, he doesn't get great points, does he?
No, of course not. And he won't get any clean sheet bonuses. Yeah. Despite
so
the
it's
fact,
a bit pointless,
know,
isn't it?
We'd love to be able to change the rules on the odd occasion that this rarity happens. But yeah, unfortunately, it probably won't happen. And Palace just have to, you know, they have to bounce back from last week, and similar with Wolves as well.
What about Cotroni? Anything on him? I mean, he nicked a goal on the goal line. It was probably hard to miss.
Well, I'm really hoping that Cotroni comes good, because he's one of mine. I've got him in my team. I like the look of him last season at Milan. And then he came to Wolves. I was like, oh, you know, one of these players that you think, I'm being clever here, I'm going to pick him because I've seen, like what I've seen, you know, on the continent. And then he comes and he hasn't really been playing much, but I'm going to persist with him. And then last week got like nicked a goal, and it wasn't the cleanest of strikes, obviously. But if he gets minutes, he's proved that, you know, he can stick the ball in the net.
I think he will play, don't you? I think they need to freshen things up. So maybe I'll be going with Cotroni, maybe nicking a goal.
Everton have lost three of their last four games against promoted sides. Who can stop them from suffering the same fate against Sheffield United?
Well, Richarlison has moved above Luca Dean as the top point scoring player for Everton in Dream Team this season. He's got 32 points. Last season he started well, got 9 goals in the first half of last season, only 4 in the second half of the season. Looks like he might be doing the same thing again, because he played pretty well against Bournemouth. Obviously, Bournemouth did a really good number on Everton. They kind of did what they had to do. I don't know what I really mean by this, but a very Bournemouth performance. They seem to just attack well against some teams, score 3 goals, go home very happy, stay in the Premier League. It's a lovely position to be in. I wish my team could do that more often.
What's wrong with Everton's defence? Because in the first few weeks of the season, Everton's defenders were like staple diets of your dream team. You get them in quickly because they're just getting clean sheet after clean sheet. What happened at Bournemouth? What happened at Wolverhampton Wanderers? Why have they conceded so many, 6 goals in 2 games?
Well, I think actually Bournemouth were brilliant. I thought Everton were atrocious. They were so bad, and when they concede, I don't think they've won a game. I think when they've conceded first, they haven't won a game. I think they've drawn 3 and lost 14, which is a real worry for them. So if you're a dream team here, I don't know whether you go for some sort of away victory and put someone on the score sheet like a Billy Sharp or a Ollie McBurney. I don't know. I don't know what sort of points you get for them.
Everton have got a big problem here, because it's interesting you mention that. When going behind under Marco Silva, they failed to win any of his 20 matches. It's a similar story if you look back at his statistics at Watford as well. What does that tell you?
Well, they were so sloppy in possession. It was absolutely incredible. All over the pitch, players who were cost an awful lot of money and really accomplished, just making such poor decisions. And Iwobi, a little 5-yard pass off target, Bernard, who's normally so reliable, losing the ball in possession, Morgan Snyding losing the ball, the back two, Keenan, Yerry Mina really struggled, didn't get a hold of Wilson, and he is a real handful. But as you say, I mean, I don't know, are they missing Zuma? Or I don't know what it is. They've got two terrific fullbacks, but they were just so far off it. Luca Dinho, who's been brilliant, just passing the ball out of play.
He got done by Adama Traore though the week before, didn't he? Quite badly.
It just suggests that Marco Silva doesn't really know how to change anything up. If Sheffield United score first this weekend, Everton won't win, and they'll it's as simple as that because of, you know, it's
they'll be
based
he'll be bang
on
under
Silver's
pressure
record.
When at Goodison, the fans will be demanding something, a real good performance.
Okay, unearth me a gem like Erling Braut Haaland.
Well,
someone David, that no one knows.
David actually mentioned the name, and I mean, Sheffield United's team is, you know, obviously come up from the Championship, but Ollie McBurnie is someone that I really want to see doing well, and I just wonder if he can see and take inspiration from his fellow ex-Championship strikers who've been doing so well this season so far. Timo Pukki, Tammy Abraham, Neil Maupai's got his first goal of the season as well. Ollie McBurnie scored 22 times in the Championship last season. I just wonder if he thinks, this step up might not be as daunting as it might seem.
Well, he had one disallowed, didn't he? Which is really unlucky.
It was unlucky because he wasn't offside. John Egan was offside. And because he threw himself at the ball, that goal didn't count. I'm obviously annoyed about this because I had Ollie McBurnie in my team.
So you've already unearthed this gem that's yet to come good.
But I just don't tell anyone about it.
He's a throwback, which is what I like. Bit old school, you know, socks down his ankles and... He's a real
handful. Good way, not in a Jack Grealish way.
No, yes.
I don't know how his shin pad situation works, though, Grealish.
Yeah.
Does he wear
I think he wears like kids'
Have
ones.
Have you ever been into a Premier League boot room and seen what the shin pads, some of the shin pads are?
No.
There is a criteria about how big the shin pads have to be. And so there's a lot of Premier League players, actually, who have just a piece of like fiberglass or flexi material cut to exactly the minimum requirements and stuff it down their socks.
Yeah.
And it is unbelievable how small these things are.
Well, that is until you have an injury. I played with a lad in Holland, and look, we all wear the same, really small shin pads until you suffer a bad injury. Next thing, he has a broken leg, he gets back, and he's wearing ice hockey shin pads.
Full legs covered.
A mate of mine last week at Fiverside, on the topic of shin pads...
Almost as relevant as the Premier League.
He did use to
play for
Norwich under
21s.
Did he?
He could have been
Pukki.
It could have been him. He didn't have any shin pads. The ref said, you need to be wearing shin pads. He got a copy of a newspaper, ripped it in two, and then used that as his shin pads, and the referee said, carry on.
Yellow pages, aren't
they? Yeah, happy days.
Wow. Let's get to Norwich. Talking of Norwich, they're playing Burnley away from home this week.
It's an historic occasion at Turf Moor this weekend, the first ever Premier League meeting between these two regular Championship rivals. In fact, it's their first top-flight clash since 1976, and Burnley could do with adding a bit more flair to their game, having struggled to create chances in their opening matches of this season and finding the net with their only shot on target at Brighton last week. Jeff Hendrick, who scored that goal, is pushing for a recall to the starting 11 against the Canaries. And it's a Norwich that are riding high after another Pukki blinder against Manchester City last week, as Clive Tilsley so famously put it, and of course a Byron blinder and a Cantwell blinder. Well, basically everyone played a blinder in their incredible win against the champions. Those kind of victories don't come along very often, and those superhuman performances can so rarely be maintained. So manager Daniel Farke will be wary of the come down from that all-time great occasion. And he's still got injury issues to contend with as well, especially at the back. Still no closer, still no Zimmerman. Max Ahrens, though, might be able to return for this one.
And fresh from defeat away at Norwich City, Pep needs a plan to deal with Watford, and that plan cannot include John Stones or Emerick Laporte. Now, Pep loves a quirky response to situations like this. He's put fullbacks in midfield like Lahm, converted midfielders into defenders before. How is he going to solve this conundrum, Nicole?
I think, do you know what? I would not want to be Pep right now. I think that's going to be a really tough one. Laporte was quite a big deal in itself, quite a big knock. And now to have lost John Stones, especially when Liverpool have started off the season so well. Obviously, City have done too, but maybe not as well as they would have liked.
Should they have gone for Maguire? They kind of did, and then they backed out. Now, with hindsight...
But it's easy to say, right? One thing City have had is depth. They've been quite unlucky, I guess, to lose Laporte and Stones right in the same sort of time.
But also company left.
Yes,
so
and really replaced, they no replacement.
Really, yeah, and I just wonder whether... He might look back here when Liverpool won the league and gone, I didn't get it right. I mean, I think Andre Gray will be rubbing his hands thinking, right, if Fernandinho is going to play centre-half, then happy days. I just wonder what his press conference will be like, because I listened to it last Friday before the game and he was so spiky. This Friday, whether he'll be up and at it, whether, you know, he'll be a bit more positive.
Well, what's his press conference going to be like on Saturday night after the game? What do you think? Do you think they would have won?
Yeah,
anyway?
It's against Watford. Watford, I think, are quite literally at the bottom of the table.
They haven't won a game this season yet.
Yeah, there's no way Watford are going to beat them.
Don't you reckon? I tell you what, they
think?
Well, they looked much better.
They looked a lot more organised, didn't they?
They did, because he went back to
under
just being simple.
Yeah.
He went, right, there's our back four, there's our two holding midfielders, I'm going to play cleverly in behind the front, I'm going to have Deulofeu on one wing, Hughes on the other, and a centre forward. Yeah, it's not rocket science.
Those well-organised defenders have got to, and midfielders, they've got to deal with Sergio Aguero, who's scored two hat-tricks against Watford in the past, and an inordinate number of goals against, I think, 10 in 7 matches or something ridiculous. I mean,
but they've got energy.
A guy who can't stop scoring,
right? Yes, but they've got energy. So when they don't have the ball, Deulofeu can run all day. Hughes can run all day to track back. So I think they'll do okay in that regard. If they're going to City are going to play out, I think they've got the energy to try and win it up high. My big concern for Watford is the centre halves. And previously they played a back three at Newcastle, and it was all over the place, Cabasele and Dawson. But they were much improved last week. So. I just don't know. Look, it'll take an absolute miracle to get something. No, maybe not a miracle after the Norwich game, but it will take something extraordinary.
If this was at Vicarage Road, you'd be more positive towards Watford, wouldn't you? I mean, but they've won 20 of the last 22 at the Etihad Stadium, Manchester City. They're not going to surrender points here, are they?
And going forward, they're just so good. Raheem Sterling right now, I mean, Aguero is brilliant, of course, but Sterling is incredible. He is in such great form. I just think he's so good. As long as the ball's getting to Aguero, to Sterling, there's no worry about City getting the goals. It will just be defensively if they do have those issues.
And also, will De Bruyne start? He left him on the bench. I don't know whether he felt he could cope without him, but even the goals they conceded against Tottenham from a set piece, the corner against Norwich, another corner. If De Bruyne was in there, I think he would have headed it clear. He had little Raheem Sterling's normally on the edge doing that job. So because he left De Bruyne on the bench, he actually had to put Raheem Sterling in the near post, who's, 5'5" or 6" or whatever, and Kevin De Bruyne, he's about 5'10" 11". So, that was looked like an area Norwich had targeted.
But that's not the thing they've lost with Kevin De Bruyne not being on the pitch most, is it? I mean, the fact is he's got his fantastic creativity. I know he's had a lot of injuries, and I wonder whether or not the workload meant that he needed to make sure he did take a couple of rests over the course of the season in order to manage that return to week in, week out action. I don't know. But it did seem a little bit as if he was taking a trip to Carrow Road a little bit lightly. And as a result, they got punished. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens in the Premier League. Right, OK, it's time for the commentator's curse. Ah, yes, you know what it's like. You're commentating on a game, and you're talking about how imperious Virgil van Dijk is, how wonderful he is. All over the course of the commentary, you're pointing out how great this guy is. No one ever beats him. Then he passes the ball straight to the opposition striker, and Fernando Llorente makes it 2-0 to Napoli. That actually happened to me on Tuesday night. Which poor souls are we going to burden with an astonishing fact that they can't possibly live up to this weekend? Nicole.
Oh, no, I back him. Teemu Pukki. He's so, so good. He's scored 6 goals in 5 games. He scored 29 goals last season in the Championship, of course. And he scored a hat-trick against Newcastle. I think he's brilliant. And also, he got Player of the Month for August, which I think was really fairly deserved. So I think, Pukki for me.
Okay, where are you going?
Me? Well, can Chelsea continue their rich vein of form with their academy Englishman.
Oh, right. Okay.
All scoring goals. So far, Abraham's got, 7?
Yeah.
Tomorrow he's nicked one as well. What a finish. Well, you wouldn't say nick. I mean, it's absolutely incredible finish.
Well done.
The box. And obviously, Mason Mount too has got 3. So he might be struggling for this game. But will it be one of them? Will it be another one who gets the opportunity to carry that on?
I'm staying with the game at the King Power Stadium, where I'm going to be on Saturday. James Maddison, with that perfectly manicured hair, that willow-like slender figure that weaves through Premier League defences like he's some sort of spectre. He's attempted more shots than anyone else in the Premier League this season without scoring. In fact, he's failed to score with his last 28 shots on goal since the back end of last season.
Just give it to Vardy then, is the moral of the story.
I'm telling you, this weekend is where that ends.
It's happening.
He is going to score against Tottenham Hotspur. Why are you shaking your head for?
Well, because
you don't know this.
He is there.
Hang on.
I've been that centre forward who's there. That person behind you, he's there, right? But he's there to serve you.
Yeah.
Right. So serve Vardy. Mm. And he's feeding off scrap. Stop shooting and give it to Vardy. Otherwise, and he'll score.
And he'll get the goals.
Otherwise, he's going to fall out with you.
Exactly.
And there'll be a video on social media of you chasing each other down the pavement. Right. Thank you very much. It's been lovely to have you, Nicole. Thanks
for
coming in.
Thank you. Been a pleasure.
Appreciate
and lovely
it.
For me as well.
No.
It's always great to see you. It's always great to see you.
Or just nice to see Nicole.
Whatever. Let's move on. Right. Remember, you can get the game day feeds via iTunes, Acast, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, or anywhere you get your podcast. And if you do that and you subscribe, not only will you get this fantastic, genius 48-minute marathon of Premier League previews, but you will also get the verdict on a Sunday morning when you wake up, and on Monday morning you'll get the record book with Danny Kelly. That's it from me, Sam Matterface. We'll be back next weekend with another preview to a whole weekend of Premier League action.
That was a Game Day Premier League preview show, a TalkSport exclusive podcast.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.